There's a question that's been messing with my head lately, not just because of what it asks, but because of what it uncovers if you dare to answer it. They built engines that ran on magnets. One guy got 376 miles per gallon with parts from a lawnmower. Another said he could burn salt water. You've probably never heard their names. That wasn't an accident. I've been going down this rabbit hole now for weeks. Old patents, raided workshops, funeral reports. Every time I thought I'd hit the bottom, I found another file. Another missing inventor. Another invention that worked and vanished. And it's not just about assassinations or sabotage. It's about control. Because if even one of these breakthroughs was real, the oil economy would collapse. And the way we move, live, and survive would change overnight. So why are we still getting 25 miles a gallon? Why do 5,000 energy patents remain locked by the government? And what really happened to the men who tried to free us from fuel? This isn't a conspiracy theory. It's a cover-up story. And the deeper you go, the more it starts to feel intentional. We've been told progress is a straight line, that every decade brings smarter tech, better engines, cleaner systems. But when it comes to fuel efficiency, that line breaks. In the 1970s, they built cars that got 200 miles per gallon, using off-the-shelf parts and clever design. Today, with 50 more years of innovation and billions in R&D, we can't even match it, not even close. And that's not because the tech doesn't exist. It's because every time someone discovers it, it disappears. Every time someone dares to challenge the fuel economy, they get challenged by something else. One man builds a vapor system, dead in a year. Another uses magnets, raided. One runs a car on water. He collapses in a parking lot. It's a pattern. Breakthrough, spotlight, silence. Because when power can't be taxed, it's taken. Hey guys, real quick before we go any deeper, if you want this channel to survive, to actually survive, please hit that subscribe button. We have no sponsors, no networks. It's just me and you digging into stuff no one else wants to touch. If you want to keep chasing truth down rabbit holes the algorithm doesn't like or won't help us push, that button's how we keep going. All right. Let's get into it. They say invention is the engine of progress. But what they don't say is what happens to that engine when it threatens the wrong economy. This isn't about one inventor or one machine. It's about a repeatable, documented pattern that shows up again and again, quietly, methodically, and with surgical precision. You build something that breaks the rules, something that uses less, costs less, or needs no fuel at all. First, they test it. Then, they tie it up. Then, they bury it. Let's start with the facts you can verify. Since 1951, the U.S. has legally blocked thousands of energy-related inventions under something called the Invention Secrecy Act. Most people don't even know that's a thing. But it is. It allows the government to review any patent, and if they think it could pose a threat to national security, they can issue a secrecy order. That means the public never sees it. The inventor can't talk about it, and the technology is gone. Not lost, just shelved quietly. And here's the part they don't put in textbooks. National security isn't always about weapons. Sometimes it's about markets, control, dependency. If your invention threatens the current power grid, the fossil fuel economy, or the way energy is taxed and tracked, you're not the hero, you're a disruption. Time and time again, inventors show up with working prototypes, technologies that run on vapor, magnets, resonance, or even water. Not just ideas, working machines, some tested by universities, others covered in major newspapers. Then suddenly, lawsuits, assets frozen, patents revoked, medical interventions, entire lives flipped upside down. And the thing is, it never makes front page news. It doesn't have to. All they need is time, confusion, and paperwork. No one gets dragged out in the middle of the night. They just get tangled up until the public forgets. And if you're thinking, well, maybe the tech just didn't work, that's fair. Skepticism is good. But how do you explain the gag orders, the classified patents, the pattern that stretches across decades in governments? This isn't a theory. It's a strategy, not to block technology, but to delay it, to make sure progress only shows up when it can be monetized, metered, and controlled. Because when innovation isn't profitable for the right people, it isn't innovation, it's a liability. Let's talk about machines that weren't supposed to exist. Not prototypes trapped in some Hollywood script, not fringe basement experiments. I'm talking about documented technologies that slipped into public view just long enough to prove they worked before they vanished. First up, Tom Ogle, 1977, a 26-year-old mechanic in Texas who modified a Ford Galaxy with a vapor fuel system. No battery, no hybrid motor. Local journalists witnessed it firsthand. 200 miles on just 2 gallons of gas. No tricks, no secret wires. He claimed his system could push over 100 miles per gallon, consistently. The story went national. A few months later, he was dead, and his technology caught in legal quicksand. Whatever he built, it scared someone enough to make sure it never hit the market. Then there's Stanley Mayer, the man who said he could run a dune buggy on water. Yeah, water. His water fuel cell used high-frequency resonance to split hydrogen and oxygen on demand. He gave public demonstrations. He filed multiple patents. And his work drew interest from both European investors and the U.S. military, including classified briefings. In 1998, he dies suddenly after a dinner with 2 Belgian businessmen. His brother claims his final words were, "They poisoned me." Whether you believe that or not, what matters is this. His tech was never reproduced. His research vanished. Next up, the GEET reactor, G-E-E-T, developed by Paul Pantone. A bizarre-looking system that used fuel vapors in a plasma-like reaction to allegedly increase mileage and drastically cut emissions. Some scientists called it crude but promising. Others said it violated known combustion principles. But the kicker? Pantone ended up institutionalized. His supporters say it wasn't because of mental instability, but because he refused to hand over the full schematics. No blueprints disappeared. GEET is now a ghost tech, half legend, half locked box. Then we come to a bombshell from MIT in 2015. A researcher developed a battery prototype that charged in under 30 seconds, didn't require lithium, and was scalable for commercial use. It was safe, clean, and potentially world-changing. And then, nothing. Funding evaporated. The lab shut it down. The public never saw a follow-up. No official reason, it just quietly dissolved. But this next one isn't theoretical. It's on public record. The Shell MPG Challenge. In the 1970s and 80s, Shell Oil sponsored a competition to build the most fuel-efficient car using real parts. No sci-fi, just engineering. One entry reached 376 miles per gallon. Tested, verified, never produced. Shell never followed up with production partners. No patents were pushed forward. They shelved the data. And then there's the Volkswagen XL1, the most efficient car ever built for public sale. A sleek diesel hybrid that got over 260 miles per gallon. It was real. Street legal. A handful hit the roads in Europe in 2013. And then Volkswagen pulled the plug, citing lack of interest. But inside sources said otherwise. It was too expensive to mass produce and too disruptive to justify the risk. Because if you sell a car that needs almost no fuel, what happens to the oil industry, the repair shops, the entire aftermarket economy? These weren't fringe experiments. These were proof of concept threats. And each time, the pattern repeated. They came out, they worked, and then they were gone. If you think this all sounds like scattered coincidences, here's the part where it stops being theory. Because in the United States, there's a legal mechanism that allows the government to quietly bury any invention it deems a threat to national security. It's called the Invention Secrecy Act of 1951. And it's not some dusty Cold War relic. It's still active today. As of the most recent declassified count, over 5,000 patents, 5,000, many of them related to energy, propulsion, or communication, have been locked behind what's called the secrecy order. That means the patent is filed, it's reviewed, and then instead of being published publicly, it's classified. The public never hears about it. The inventor is legally gagged for life. No product, no prototypes, no further research, just gone. So now, what qualifies as a national security threat? Well, not weapons, not surveillance tools, but any technology that could decentralize control. You invent a system that lets people generate power at home? That's a threat. A battery that charges in seconds and doesn't require global mining chains? That's a threat. A combustion redesign that cuts oil dependency by 90%? Most definitely also a threat. It doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be possible and disruptive. And here's the worst part. This system doesn't attack ideas head on. It doesn't try to disprove them or shut them down in public. It simply absorbs them and silences them. Because denial causes noise, but silence? Silence erases memory. These aren't lost technologies. They were found, then intentionally hidden. And in a world built on control, nothing is more dangerous than a power source they can't meter. So let's say, for a moment, that the machines we've seen, the vapor engines, the water cells, the magnet motors, actually worked. Or even that one of them worked. Now ask yourself, what happens next? Because this isn't just about better gas mileage. It's about global leverage. It's about the fact that the modern world runs in a very specific script. One that begins and ends with oil. You see, after World War II, the US made a deal with Saudi Arabia. We'd protect them militarily. In return, they'd only sell oil in US dollars. That agreement became the petrodollar, a system where every country on Earth needs dollars to buy oil. And that demand? It props up the entire American economy. So what happens if oil demand plummets? What happens if people start generating their own energy? Or using a tenth of what they used to. The truth is, real fuel efficiency doesn't just hurt oil companies. It destabilizes currencies, rewrites trade dependencies, and threatens the entire geopolitical stack. And that's just a top layer. Zoom in a little further and look at the auto industry. If you could build a car that gets 200 miles per gallon, or runs on water, or needs almost zero maintenance, you wouldn't just save fuel, you'd break the dealership model, which makes money off markups and service, the parts supply chain, which thrives on things breaking, the planned obsolescence that ensures you'll be back in 5 years for a brand new one. So in other words, real efficiency? Well, no, that kills the model. A car that lasts 25 years and costs pennies to run? Nope, that's anti-capitalist. That's fewer repairs, fewer oil changes, fewer loans, fewer upsells. And suddenly, entire sectors, from auto parts to petroleum to global finance start losing money. Big money. Recurring money. So, the system resists. Not because it's evil, but because it's engineered not to evolve. So you see what's going on here? The system needs you buying. It needs you dependent. And above all, it needs you to believe that this is the best we can do. Because the moment you don't, that's when the whole machine starts shaking loose. They told us electric cars were the future. Silent, clean, revolutionary. The answer to decades of oil addiction. But the deeper you look, the more it starts to feel like a trick mirror. Because EVs didn't break the system, they repackaged it. Let's start with what powers them. Most electric vehicles depend on lithium-ion batteries, which require rare earth minerals, lithium, cobalt, nickel, mined in some of the most geopolitically unstable regions on Earth. We just recently, the US, signed a deal with the Congo, one of the most unstable regions on Earth. Recently, you've seen the headlines of Ukraine, of our interest in the rare minerals that Ukraine has to offer, also an extremely geopolitical unstable part of the world. That means entire nations are now scrambling to control the next mineral supply chain, just like they did with oil. And the mining, it's not clean, it's not green, and it's anything but ethical. Then there's the grid. EVs don't make their own power. They pull it from an already stressed, aging electrical infrastructure. And guess what happens in a blackout? No power, no car, no autonomy. But it goes deeper. Modern EVs are connected, software controlled, update enabled, and in some cases, equipped with remote shutdown capabilities. That means if someone wanted to, they could turn your car off from anywhere. Not because it's broken, not because you did anything wrong, but because the system allowed it. And suddenly, mobility isn't freedom, it's a permission slip. All while you're told you're helping the planet. That's the greenwash. That's the illusion. You weren't given electric cars to escape the system. You were given them to stay on the leash. A new leash, same collar, different battery, same game. Because if real freedom was ever the goal, they would have shown you the engines that worked, the ones that ran clean, cheap, and off the grid. But those were buried. These were approved. There's one thing they fear more than any engine, energy that can't be sold. Because as long as energy is metered by the gallon, by the kilowatt, or by the battery, you stay on the hook, not just economically, but existentially. That's why this next set of stories doesn't just raise questions, it exposes a war, not just on inventions, but on imagination itself. Let's rewind to Nikola Tesla. He wasn't trying to sell power, he was trying to liberate it. His Wardenclyffe Tower, built in the early 1900s, wasn't just about radio. It was designed to transmit electricity wirelessly, through the air, through the ground, across oceans. Energy, free and abundant, drawn from the earth itself. But the moment J.P. Morgan, who was backing him, realized there'd be no meter, no way to bill the public, he pulled the funding. The project was scrapped, the tower dismantled, and Tesla? He died alone, his notebook seized by the US government the day after. That wasn't about safety, that was about ownership. Then there's John Canisius. He wasn't even trying to make energy. He was experimenting with radio waves to treat cancer. When he discovered he could ignite salt water, he filmed it, demonstrated it. Radio waves breaking the hydrogen bonds in H2O, releasing fuel from the most abundant substance on Earth. It should have changed everything. Instead, the Pentagon took notice, and Canisius died of pneumonia just as attention was mounting. His work was never fully replicated. His files, gone. Too fringe for serious funding. Too real to ignore. Classic pattern. And then there are the magnetic engines. Troy Reed claimed he built one. A self-sustaining loop of magnets driving a rotor. No combustion, no grid. He gave news demos, showed working models, explained the theory. But you don't see those on the road. You don't see them in labs. You don't see them anywhere. Because the moment energy becomes non-linear, non-local, or non-monetized, it crosses an invisible line. The line between physics and heresy. Because if energy is infinite, if it's something you can tap into, not buy, then every power structure on Earth loses its grip. And so these ideas aren't just dismissed. They are ridiculed, erased, buried under layers of patent law, academic skepticism, and weaponized silence. Not because they didn't work, but because if any one of them worked, even halfway, the entire game board would flip. What if you never needed to fill a tank again? What if your home ran on ambient resonance from the planet itself? What if you could move, live, and connect without ever plugging in? That's not just a tech revolution. That's freedom. And freedom, in their world, is the enemy. They don't kill these ideas with tanks. They kill them with shame, with laughter, with silence. Because unmetered energy, it's not just unprofitable, it's uncontrollable. And in this war, control is everything. This isn't just about what they buried, it's about what they delayed. Every decade we didn't move forward, they made sure we paid for standing still. And now, we're living in the fallout. Gas prices that gut entire paychecks. A power grid that can't handle a summer breeze. Wars disguised as energy policy. And a planet teetering on the edge, while the blueprint to fix it sat in a drawer labeled national security. These technologies didn't disappear because they failed. They disappeared because they worked too well. Because in their world, power only matters if it can be metered. And freedom only matters if it's licensed. So what's the real crisis here? It's not oil. It's not lithium. It's not carbon. It's the fact that we were ready for a different world decades ago, and they made sure we'd never arrive. If even one of these machines was real, if even one of these patents could do what it claimed, then everything changes. That's why this matters now, because the truth doesn't just hurt them. The truth exposes how long they've been gambling with our future. And if you're still waiting for permission to question that, you've already waited too long. We always think that if something worked, really worked, we'd hear about it. That it'd be on the front page. That it would rise to the top. That progress, if discovered, would be unstoppable. But that's not how the world works. Because a story of lost energy tech isn't just about cover-ups and gag orders. It's about how easily something can disappear when no one's looking. When one machine breaks the model and someone makes a quiet phone call. When a garage catches fire, or a file goes missing. Or an inventor walks into a meeting and never builds again. And the rest of us, we go back to paying at the pump. We buy the new car, the new battery, the next thing wrapped in the same old leash. Not because we're blind, but because we're exhausted, distracted, numb. That's the part that gets me. That somewhere in a warehouse or a bunker, or maybe just a shoebox in someone's attic, is a drawing, a circuit, a design that could have changed everything, and it never even got the chance to be wrong. It wasn't a conspiracy that buried it. It was indifference. And that's why this matters. Not because it's dramatic, but because it's quiet. Because nobody noticed. And because maybe that was always the point. All right, folks, that's the end of this investigation. But if it left your brain buzzing or your gut unsettled, good. That's what Divergent Files is here for. We don't chase headlines, we chase the stories that got buried, the ones someone decided you shouldn't hear, and we dig until something breaks loose. If you felt something shift in this episode, if it cracked open even one what if inside you, hit subscribe, drop your theories, and share it with someone who still believes the world runs the way they were told. And if you want to go deeper into the declassified material, the theories too hot for YouTube, and the stuff we have to whisper, you'll find all of it at patreon.com/divergentfiles. This project runs on curiosity, obsession, and the support of people like you. There's no studio, no safety net, just one guy chasing the threads they cut. I'm Ralph, and this has been another entry in the Divergent Files. Stay sharp, stay grounded, and remember that you are truly appreciated. These investigations are powered by those who believe truth still matters. Thank you to our Patreon supporters. Join the mission at patreon.com/divergentfiles.